Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Thrilled to center field and deep. Back on it is Eaton. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good morning. Welcome to our show. Today on our program, you'll hear from Steven Souza Jr. about his terrific start. Doug Wechter of Fox Sports Sun will stop on by. Brent Honeywell, the Rays' top pitching prospect, will discuss his promotion to AAA. We'll also chat with Todd Callis about his return to Tropicana Field, visit with perhaps the Rays' oldest fan, and discuss being promoted with Shane Peterson and Chase Whitley.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. Our featured guest today is outfielder Steven Souza Jr., who has a birthday on Monday. First of all, Steven, happy birthday a little bit early. I know you've had some really good baseball birthdays. What's the best birthday you've had and why?
Man, that one in New York last year was pretty incredible. I don't think I've ever had I don't remember having any particular games when I was younger on my birthday. Definitely when you get your first car, you're allowed to drive. That's an incredible birthday. But yeah, that one in New York was pretty special last year.
You obviously have gotten off to such a terrific start. Is this the best you think you've played since getting to the majors, and if so, why?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's just a lot of factors. And to narrow it down to one would just take away from anybody else. And I think I got away from the root of the person who I was and the baseball player, most of all, who I was. And I really I owe a lot of who I became as a baseball player to a tremendous amount of people. But really bringing it back, I owe a lot of it to Chad Mottola and just allowing me to be myself again.
You know, you talk about being yourself. Having spent 8 years at the AAA level with Durham and knowing that you hit 350 at that level, I know how hard that is. And are you more that player now than, let's say, the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think so. Chad Mottola reminds me of the hitting coach that I had in Syracuse, who was Joe Dillon, who just took me to a whole different level of play. And just his faith in me as a player allowed me to play with the confidence that I couldn't, I can't really describe. And so that's what I'm trying to be. I feel like that year and the years before that, I was just a hitter and the power came along with it. And then all of a sudden you get to the big leagues and everybody just wants power. That's all everybody talks about. So just trying to go back to my roots of being a good hitter and really playing the game, competing in the box instead of just let me try and swing as hard as I can three times and hopefully one of them goes out.
Joe obviously is a former Ray, and I think people know his personality too. It's kind of interesting that you compare the two of them. You also have given a lot of credit to Alex Cobb and Chase Whitley, and I would guess they've helped in the clubhouse as much as anything else.
Yeah, they're just real leaders. You know, I mean, they're just real genuine guys who their love comes first, and it's really special when you get somebody to show you that, hey, I care about you as a person, baseball aside. I don't care what happens out there in the field, but I do want you to succeed. And so those two guys have really just held me accountable to just basically get myself off my back. And I mean, they both tell me every day that I'm my own worst enemy. So it was an amazing timing last year. I said this the other day that Mottola came in and Cobb came off the DL and Whitley came off the DL all at the same time. And on the same day, they all said the exact same thing of, you need to get out of your own way and just go play for this last month. And it just took off from there.
And sometimes you need to hear it from multiple people multiple times, and obviously it has worked out. I think also we've talked about this in the exhibition season. You know, you becoming a dad, how much do you think that's helped you, at least kind of erase baseball when you leave the ballpark and make it easier to come back from an 0-for-4 because you're going to have that every now and then?
Yeah, it makes it really fun to come home and see that smiling face of my boy. And really even see my wife too, and the way that she takes care of him, just seeing those two faces and watching them smile, is really incredible. And I don't have time to sit and think about the game anymore. Whether I was 4-for-4 or 0-for-4, I've got to change poopy diapers. I've got to get, the milk ready. And that's something I really enjoy doing. But at the same time, it makes me focus more when I come to the field on what I need to do. I don't want to waste time here anymore, so I don't maybe necessarily get to the field at 12 o'clock and just sit around all day. I get here so I can spend time with my family, but I get my work done, and that focus has changed.
You talk about tools, changing diapers. Okay, so which one of the tools is better for you right now? Changing diapers, burping, or if you get the bottle to feed your son?
You know, my wife is the best bottle feeder, for sure. I don't think I can – anything she does with him, I can't beat her. She's an amazing mother. I think my best quality is changing diapers, which is nuts, because if you had asked me that before I had a kid, I would have told you I'd have never changed a diaper. But I can get in there and get out without any harm done.
That's pretty good. Yeah. You know, you guys like to have a lot of fun, and I think it shows. But there, I don't see rock, paper, scissor anymore. What happened?
We lost a lot of games last year, and I won a lot of rock, paper, scissors games. We just tried to mix it up. You know, KK and I especially, we don't like to go through the motions out there and just do something to do something. And so he wanted to mix it up this year, and I was all for it. And so we're just trying something different.
So explain the post-game celebration. Is more like a jump and bump, kind of old school, you know, NFL touchdown type thing? Or?
Yeah, trying to keep it simple. I think we just put our hands in and you know, our goal out there is to not let anything drop. So we call it the no-fly zone out there. And so we put our hands in one at a time, say each word, and then jump up and celebrate the victory.
Nice. You also celebrate after catches are made in the outfield. So how did that start? And do you change up what you do after the catch when you guys kind of point to one another?
I honestly can't even go back to it started in 15, but I don't remember why we started doing it. And it just kind of grew into this thing of, you know, we just pointed at each other, and then we had this little fist bump that Nelly does, and now we've just got kind of a whole routine. But in reality, it keeps us locked in the game. You know, I think when you can see someone kind of lazily doing it, you know, he gets on me or I get on him, and we get ourselves kind of back in the game.
Steven Souza Jr. with us again on This Week in Rays Baseball, and we mentioned the fun that you guys have on the field, but off the field too. I didn't realize until I saw the media guide that you actually do some drumming with Evan Longoria.
I do. Me and him have gone back a couple times. Most of the time I go back there by myself, but I haven't done it as much this year because I would rather just be hanging out with my son than drumming at the field. But it is a hobby that I used to do quite often.
Favorite drummer?
Neil Peart. From Rush. Man, he is, if you ever get a chance to watch YouTube videos of him, he has, it feels like 100 drums around him, and he's never offbeat. It's unbelievable. I think he's got a degree in music, and it's just like, it's an art. It really is.
Have you met him? And if not, is that kind of on the wish list of, if you had, you know, people you like to be at the dinner table with that you haven't met before?
Yeah, my dad actually met him. My dad actually warmed up for Rush, and so that's how he became one of my favorite drummers growing up. Is when my dad told me that he warmed up for Rush, my mind was blown. So yeah, one day hopefully I get a chance.
Who else might be on that short list if you had to put together of people you want to meet? How about dead or alive? I'll let you know yeah. expand the group.
Man, I would love I'd love to sit down with Jackie Robinson. I'd love to sit down with Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King Jr. is probably one of my old time people. Who wouldn't want to sit down with Jesus, right? Like, you just want to know what happened back then. Martin Luther King Jr., though, I think is one of the people where I would just, the incredible, like, courage that guy had during a time of complete scrutiny, I just want to ask how he did it, you know?
And on another level, you do a lot of work locally, Big Brothers Big Sisters. You've done the bowling event the past couple of years. What does that mean to you to help out youngsters and put a smile on their faces?
Kids are our future, right? I mean, we got to pour into them, and my wife and I are just getting involved with another group called the International Justice Mission, who basically try to take kids out of sexual slavery and give them a new life. And these things, you know, with Big Brothers Big Sisters, the kids that just need mentors in their life, those things, trying to redirect the course of their life where it's headed in a wrong direction. My wife and I just feel like if we can pour into the youth and do that and give them an opportunity to have a fulfilled life, it means the world to us.
And you've traveled abroad. You know, you've done a mission in the Philippines. Are there places that you still want to go to do some sort of mission work? And if so, where?
Yeah, I think we want to go back to the Philippines. We have one of our ministries there, and Considered the Lily is, you know, our main partnership that we're with there. So we'd probably want to go back there. I want to take a trip to Jerusalem and go to Israel and just walk all over there. It's just what I've heard from what you get over there and the reality of life is incredible.
you obviously have the platform and the ability to do this because of, you know, what a tremendous athlete you are. I know you were also a pretty good football player. So wide receiver, defensive back, linebacker, if you were not playing baseball, which position would you be at right now in football?
I would want to play wide receiver. I talk about this in the locker room a lot, that a defensive back is just, I mean, the guys that can play that position is just incredible. I would not want to be on my own island. However, I would love to school those guys on the line. But, yeah, maybe one day Pete Carroll will let me get the dual assignment like Deion Sanders did.
You'll take the flight out in game, finish the game, and then head over?
Yeah, it'll be Deion Sanders, Bo Jackson, and Steven Souza. We play dual sports.
And you would be what kind of receiver? Are you a blazer? Or a possession?
Possession guy. I'd definitely be a possession guy.
So give me a comp. Give me an NFL comp because you're a big – I know you're a Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
Steve Largent's probably a little shorter than you, so give me a good comp.
I would probably say Eric Decker. I mean, he can run, so he's sneaky fast, which I can run a little bit, but great hands and a sure receiver.
Obviously, a terrific start to the season, and we certainly hope it continues. If you're to play this year out, what is your hope for you and for your team right now?
World Series champions, bottom line. I don't care what my stats end up at the end of the year. If it takes me hitting .400 all year, if I got to play outstanding D, whatever it is, there's nothing like holding that trophy up and putting that ring on your finger as a team and saying that you accomplished that.
And what have you learned about yourself and the team in just the first 3 weeks as you guys have kind of battled through a lot of injuries?
Man, we got our tails whooped on the road, and we opened up really good. But the fact that we got our tails whooped on the road and came back and swept a really good Detroit team shows that we're not going to go down, and we're not going to beat ourselves up anymore. I feel like last year we snowballed a lot when we got beat. It took a long time for us to come back and start winning series. So the fact that we bounced back quick, it shows a lot of resiliency in this team and the fact that we're not going to go down without a fight.
Is there a vibe, a different vibe inside that clubhouse overall that you felt even in spring training?
Yeah, and honestly, I was thinking about this last night was I think Ricky Weeks has a lot to do with that. His personality and his leadership that he's brought to this team, and Tommy Hunter in the bullpen, those two have really changed the culture for the good. I mean, the way that they go about their business and the way that they treat players is just none like I've seen.
Well, hopefully that continues. Have a very happy birthday, and we certainly appreciate some time on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Always a pleasure with you, Neil.
Steven Souza Jr. joining us. We continue right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and time now to take a look at the Rays from the TV perspective, and joining us a guy who's been doing that on the Fox Sports Sun side, Doug Wechter. Doug, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you for having me on.
To be 10-9 at this point of the season, with all the injuries the Rays have had to deal with, to me, pretty impressive. Your take?
Yeah, I think it's about where we were hoping to be, honestly, after the first 14-game schedule that we had. It was a pretty tough schedule. A lot of AL East opponents, and I was kind of hoping that we'd get out of that around .500. Obviously, our splits with the home and road records are a little bit off, but still being around .500 at this point in the season, I think we're doing a pretty good job, and I think we're right where we need to be.
Especially, you know, you mentioned the home. And at home, the Rays the last 3 years had not been a really good team, and to get off to 9-3 with a chance to win a fourth straight series today. What's the biggest difference you've seen?
You know, I think it's a comfort factor. I think they like coming home now. We got a couple guys who are used to playing in the trop a little bit more, and you know, sleeping in your own bed, there's a lot to be said about that. They get to the park a little bit later, and you know, it's a good place to play. I know a lot of fans have said things over the years about the trop, but it really is a good place to play. Players love coming here, and you know, you're starting to see the team embrace playing here, so it's really good stuff. Seeing the record at home, well, let's just hope it carries on to the road.
Indeed. And to finish up at home, one thing that I've noticed, I think this is a more dynamic and more athletic team offensively, and this new turf seems to play a little bit faster than the old one. Do you see that too?
Yeah, absolutely, especially with the infield. You can see it getting on the infielders a little bit quicker. And, you know, I think they're getting used to it now. We're starting to see guys make plays that they typically make. And I think in the long run, it'll be good for the Rays. You know, we'll be able to make a few more ground ball double plays. With how slick our infield is, it should really play out well for us.
Tell me this, as we take a look at, you know, today's lineup. Kevin Kiermaier's not in there. Obviously, he's you know, it was clear he was sick the last couple of days, especially the way they swung the bat. Obviously, he's a big piece of the puzzle. It's not going to be easy for them to find a way, but they kind of need to right now. They're missing a lot of pieces.
Yeah, you know, some guys are just going to have to step up. Obviously, you want Kiermaier in the lineup when he's healthy. But if you watch the game last night, you know, he wasn't helping the team. He was so sick and just not being himself. And, you know, kudos to him for trying to battle through it. But at a certain point, I think they realized that he probably wasn't going to be able to help out, and they put Peter Borges in, who actually came up with a big RBI in himself. So, you know, it's kind of the next man up theory. Look for somebody to take over that role tomorrow or today, and hopefully we'll have Kiermaier back 100% here for the rest of the season shortly.
Indeed. You know, one thing they are missing, though, a lot of is bullpen. You know, Tommy Hunter hurt yesterday. Xavier Cedeno goes on the DL the day before, and that's in addition to Brad Boxberger and Sean Tolleson. Quite a test for what's becoming a very young team in terms of their bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. One guy you will not see them call up is me. They will not be bringing me back. No, I'll tell you what. All joking aside, you're going to have guys like Austin Pruitt step up. The way he's flip-flopped the start of the season, first 5 2/3, you know, were bad for him. The next 5 2/3 or the last 5 2/3 have been absolutely outstanding. And he's the type of guy who can pick up some innings, you know. We're going to have a few of those guys, and it's going to be up to Cash and Hickey to work through matchups and just piece together until we get 100% bullpen health. You know, they're going to have to piece things together, and hopefully on the starter's end, they can go a little bit deeper in the game, take a little bit of pressure off the bullpen, and get that ball to call as fast as possible.
You hit the nail on the head, because this is now 11 straight games entering today where they have not had a start of longer than 6 innings. That's a long time to go without getting a guy into the seventh and getting it out in the seventh.
Yeah, 100% agree. The one good thing I will tell you is last time Andreese, who was pitching today, last time Andreese was on that mound, he went into the seventh, did not record an out, but at least he was in the seventh inning. So hopefully he can elongate his start today, maybe get through 7 innings and possibly even into the eighth, which would be exactly what the Rays need right now, and get that ball to Colomé, like I said before. I mean, Colomé is lights out. And as soon as we can get him that ball, we feel very comfortable.
And I think not only because of the fact that you've got the bullpen injuries, but this is a stretch where you're playing 15 straight without an off day. And then overall, 35 out of 36. I mean, that's a lot in April and May. Normally, you see a couple more days off sprinkled in, and it's a tough schedule.
Yeah, it's very tough on the bullpen. It's tough on everybody, you know, playing that many games in a row. It's tough on your body, and it just wears you down. But for the bullpen especially, if the starters are not consistently getting deep in the game, that's that much more pressure put on the bullpen to extend outings. And you got guys like Chase Whitley, Austin Pruitt, who they're going to be looking to get more than 3 outs. And when they come in, they have been doing it recently, they need to do a good job of extending their outings as well.
All right, Doug, you were talking about the importance of getting length from the starters, and certainly Matt Andreese is a guy who's done it, but a guy I think there's some concern over is Blake Snell. And last night, less than half his pitches were thrown for strikes.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, honestly, he's still getting through 5 innings. He's still giving up around 2, 3, 4 runs consistently. So he's giving you outings to where you're still in the game, but it's not the Blake Snell that everybody wants to see. Blake Snell has the stuff, if he's in the zone, to be one of the top pitchers in the league. Now, getting him in the zone is the problem. He's a young guy. I think he's still 24 years old. It's a problem that a lot of young guys have, especially with power stuff like him. But I think he and Hickey are going to be working through it all year just to try to get him back into the zone, try to make sure you're not trying to make strikeout pitches on 0-0 count. Look, you're just trying to get ahead of guys and pitch to contact. Your stuff is so good. If you pitch to contact and try to force these guys to hit the ball early in the count, you're going to be ending up in good counts, and that's when you can use your wipeout curveball or out pitches when you're ahead in the count. So I think early in the count, if he's trying to pitch toward contact a little bit more, you're going to see some positive things coming out of him.
Is it very different or at all different from the struggles that Matt Moore had command-wise at points of his major league career?
No, it's similar. I mean, both young guys, you see a lot of similarities, and you can compare them pretty easily. Both power left-handers, young guys coming up into the big leagues. You can call them a little bit erratic, effectively wild. But really, at some point in time in their career, they do have to hone it in. And, a guy like Snell, you see him – and you want him to develop into a guy who can go consistently 6, 7, 8 innings every time out. And right now he's just not giving you that. And that's something that Moore was doing. I think it's a little bit mechanical. I think if he can get those mechanics honed in just a little bit, shorten up his delivery a little bit, then he can, you know, stay in the zone a little bit more. But I think it is mental on a certain side. He's a young guy, 24 years old. He's still learning how to pitch. And he's been given a weapon in his arm to go out there and have the ability to dominate. Now he just has to learn how to use it. So we're gonna see some positive things coming out of him. And I guarantee you, with Hickey on his side, I mean, they're going to work through it, and he's going to get to where he needs to be.
Well, let's hope sooner than later. We certainly appreciate a few minutes and health sooner than later. Doug, thanks for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Yeah, anytime, Neilio.
Thank you very much to Doug Wechter of Fox Sports Sun for joining us on the show today. Before we continue, let's pause for station identification on the Rays Baseball Network. Time now on This Week in Rays Baseball to turn to the minor league side. And joining us on the phone, Brent Honeywell, the Rays' top pitching prospect, who this week was promoted to AAA Durham. Brent, congratulations. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I always like being on the show with you.
I appreciate you coming on. Tell me what it meant when you learned you were going to AAA.
Of course I was excited, but I thought I would be fighting for a spot out of spring training, too. So I just kind of went and did what I had to do in Montgomery, and unfortunately, some things in front of me happened a little bit that was kind of unfortunate, but, it's just opportunity opened up, but I'm excited.
Did Brady Williams, the manager in AA, did he do anything unique in terms of calling you in or letting you know about the promotion, or did you have an idea when you heard that there were some injuries in Durham?
I've kind of had some idea or something like that, but Brady pulled me in and basically said, don't stop here, don't stop pitching like you know how to pitch. I have a lot of respect for Brady. He's best manager I've ever had, and it was kind of bittersweet leaving team like that we had down there to come up. But no, I'm excited. I'm excited for the new opportunity and different level.
You made one start and three runs, six innings, solid against Indianapolis, the Pirates' top farm team. Obviously, I didn't see you pitch. What did you think of your first start? How did you evaluate it?
Didn't go as planned, to tell you that. I'm not upset with the result as much as I am with the quality of the pitches I threw. So the quality of the pitches that I threw was not very good. And I didn't have my best stuff, but I had to try and keep my team in the ballgame. I thought I did that, too. I thought I tried to keep us in the ballgame as long as possible, but two long balls kind of hurt me. And, I mean, those are really the only blemishes that were in that game was two long balls. But, I was following home. The count a little bit. It'll be different come Tuesday. It'll be different.
What are you hoping to improve on this year, Brent? And we're chatting again with Brent Honeywell.
I'm not really sure yet. I just want to keep pitching like I'm pitching right now. So far, I'm pretty content. Like I said, I'm pretty content with the way I'm throwing the ball right now. I've always wanted to improve on my fastball career. I want to get to a point in time where I have, walk totals of, single digits by the end of the year. And right now I'm not on a very good pace for that. So, it's just something small that I'd like to do is, try and keep free passes, stop giving free passes. But other than that, there's nothing too serious.
You mentioned the fastball command. Last year, I think when we spoke, you talked about, learning how to pitch more with your fastball. What did you learn last year about that, and how critical is that for you to continue to get better?
Now, I can use it early in the count, late in the count, behind in the count, ahead in the count. Just pitching with the fastball. Don't show them what you have until you really have to. Other stuff may occur to where you do have to play your off-speed stuff, but, if you're beating them in the zone with the fastball, just keep timing away with the fastball.
You're with a group now, Jake Faria, who you've played with, Chi-Wei Hu, who you've been with, and Ryan Yarbrough, who was in the same league last year with you. How well do you think the group of you are going to push one another to obviously try and get to the next step, which is the big leagues?
I think anytime you get some arms like that around one another, anytime you can get some arms like that together, you're going to see you're going to see the best brought out in a lot of us, you know, really soon. To me, that's another big part of being able to have a staff like we have. They, you know, we're going to continue to push each other. You know, I rode through a heck of a game the other day. It was actually fun to watch. I actually don't remember seeing him in the Senior League, but you know, it's gonna turn up one time where our bullpen is kind of, you know, where it could, it's got a possibility of being, you know, two guys used out of the bullpen a game. Because you know, our starters can go really deep in games. Then you know, I don't think there's any better bullpen in any league or in any team that we have. You know, our bullpen is pretty strong, so I have no worries about the bullpen at all.
And you're also with a very talented group, you know, in its entirety. I mean, absolutely. Yourself, Willie Adames, Jake Bowers, Casey Gillespie, and MLB.com's top five prospects in the organization are all in AAA Durham right now, which I would assume has to be exciting with a group of you so close to the big leagues.
Oh, I mean, you know, not even thinking about the prospect, you know, rankings or anything like that. But you can just kind of tell, like, if you're watching a game and you see Casey Gillespie at first and Jake Bowers in left, right, or wherever he's going to play, and you know, you see Willie at short, you see Hager at second, you see Keenan at second. There's a lot of things that guys do really, really, really good, and you know, it's really fun to watch, especially when you have. I mean, there's talent busting out the seams up here. It's really, really, really fun to watch.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, outside of your team, and I know how important your family is, how's your younger brother doing?
He's good. He's good. I think he's got, like, one more week, and I think he's off the mound. So he's excited. He's excited.
Will he start? Is he hoping to get drafted, or is he hoping to go the junior route you went, or what's his path?
I mean, of course he wants to play professional baseball, and of course he wants to get drafted. But you know, the thing is, nobody's seen him, mm-hmm. and you can think anybody listening can think I'm biased if they want to, but I've never seen a left-handed arm like that. You know, that worked really good like that. And but no, I think I really truly think he's. For some reason, I think he's got a chance to get into pro ball this year. You know, if he doesn't, he's going to go to school, pitch a year at Walter State, and then hopefully get out of there after that. But other than that, you know, you just kind of got to take it day by day when you had something like that, when you're 16 years old.
No doubt. Well, I wish him a lot of health and success, and obviously I wish the same for you. Continued success on the mound, and congratulations on the promotion to AAA Durham, and hopefully it won't be long before we see you at some point here.
All right, Neil. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And that is Rays top pitching prospect Brent Honeywell. Now, coming up on This Week in Rays Baseball, we'll sit down with Todd Callis and coming back to Tropicana Field, visit with maybe the oldest Rays fan, and chat with a couple of players who've recently joined the club up from AAA Durham. That's right after this on the Rays Baseball Network.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and we're now joined by a former member of the Rays broadcast team. It seems weird to say that, and now the TV voice of the Houston Astros, and Todd Callis. Todd, thanks for a few minutes.
Always my pleasure, Neil. It does sound weird to hear it as well.
You know, for you, when did you start thinking about this series and coming back to this ballpark, and what has it meant to you?
I think I got the job on December 22nd, so I started to look forward to the series ever since then. Circled April 21 through 23. I was excited to the point that the Rays were home against the Astros that quickly into the season. I'd be able to return to Tampa Bay. It's a place that I have great memories of, spent close to 25 years of my life here, and it will always have a special place for me, and I was very excited to see that on the schedule that it was in the first month of the season.
And the tribute on Friday night, what did that mean to you?
Meant a whole lot. I mean, we, you know, did a lot of fun things here over the 19 years. We've had some great teams in the more recent Rays incorporation of the team, but the first 10 years as the Devil Rays wasn't very fun. But we still had a good time on the broadcast, and I think the fans appreciated the fact that we put on a pretty good show back then. And once the team got better, you know, our numbers really jumped up too. But we always had that core group that started from 1998, and a lot of people that I've seen around the stadium and the workers and the fans, and then that tribute on Friday night, that was all really cool, and it was touching, and it was something that I didn't expect, so it was an outstanding moment for me.
when, and I'm sure you've probably got to watch through it again, mm-hmm. What moments stick out? And then was there something that you're like, I wonder if that was on the cutting room floor?
Yeah, they probably left some good stuff on the cutting room floor, too. I didn't know they had that many shots of me still in the archives, so that was kind of surprising. And then the very first shot stood out for me because I looked so young, back with all my hair standing up in 1999, I guess it was, or 2000, whenever that Sports Channel video was. But, yeah, I was here a long time. Started here at age 32 and left here at age 50. So a lot of quality years here in Tampa Bay, and again, it's a place, no matter how long I'm in Houston or in the game of baseball, this place will always be very special to me.
And still a home for you, right?
Yeah, I'm still keeping my home in Tampa. I'm going to have it at least through this offseason. I'll try and figure out after this year what to do, whether to rent it out or sell it. I always feel like I want to have a base here, so more than likely I won't sell it.
In terms of the baseball, was 08 or obviously that would, I would think, be among your best memories, and 11, game 162, but what games stick out, what moments on the field?
Those two in particular, game 7 against the Red Sox, ALCS, will probably be the best baseball moment of my career, even no matter what happens in Houston. Reason being is because the Phillies had already qualified for the World Series. Rays had that 3-1 lead in Boston, couldn't close out game 5, lose game 6, and now all of a sudden you're thinking, oh man, it was, you know, Dad's team's in the World Series, the Rays got this close, if it doesn't happen, that's going to be crushing. It worked out, Rays won game 7, got to share the 2008 World Series with Dad, and that was a dream come true. Who would have ever thought before the season started, when the Rays had never won more than 70 games, that it's possible you could have a Phillies-Rays World Series. It was almost like there was something predestined to let that happen, because Dad would pass away the next April, so that was his last full season in the major leagues.
And as a broadcaster, I know dreams come true also are to get to do what you're doing now, the play-by-play side of things, and especially since your dad had been there in Houston before. How much did all of that mean, and what was that moment like when you got the news that you got the job in Houston?
It was really cool. I'd gone through a couple of job processes prior to that, but I never really felt along the way that it was something that I wanted to leave Tampa Bay for. This was the first time going through the process that I thought, you know what, this is a really good opportunity. I even told my fiance, if this doesn't work out, I'll probably just stay in Tampa Bay the rest of my career, because it really felt like the one really good fit. And part of it had to do with being there and being born there in Houston, but it more had to do with what the team was about, what the process was about, getting to know the team president, Reed Ryan, and other people within the organization and the people at Root Sports. It felt like a good fit from the start, and I was lucky to have it work out.
Fans probably don't know the difference, but can you give them an idea as to what it's, how different it is now doing what you're doing, preparing for a game on an everyday basis to do play-by-play versus hosting pre- and post-game and doing all the in-game reports?
Yeah, totally different preparation level. We have a great sideline reporter in Julia Morales, who's been with the Astros for 5 years now, and she does a lot of the things that I have done in the past here with the Rays. So it took a little while, and still is kind of a transition, weaning off going for those same stories, because there really is no purpose for me to get them, but other than to have them for my own personal knowledge. But she's getting a lot of those side stories that I used to get. It's a lot more preparation leading into getting to the ballpark, you know, just getting ready for any one of a number of possibilities of who could be on the mound, who could be at the plate within the course of a series. Getting to know a new division, the AL West, a little bit more. I knew the AL East so well, and now learning that division has been different. But there is a big difference in preparation level, pre- and post-game show, than it is going into a play-by-play. Pre-game show especially is a little more scripted. Post-game show has a little more of a free flow to it. But the game itself, you have to be prepared for almost anything.
And I know, obviously, working 19 years with Dwayne, you have a tremendous relationship with him. Has he been, someone that you've called upon just to get feedback or thoughts as before the season started?
Yeah, we talked a lot. In fact, he and his wife Carla have a place over in Houston, so they visited us a couple of times in the off season and helped us with the transition to moving there. Dwayne also knew Reed Ryan because his kids grew up with Nolan Ryan's kids when he was with Houston. So all kinds of connections there. And, of course, Dwayne's always been like a big brother to me, and he is somebody that I admire and look up to, and I'm so lucky to call a friend. And he's been a huge inspiration and a huge impact and an influence on me making this transition so smoothly to Houston.
And you've got a race connection with the fact that Jeff Blum's your partner, and he played here as a Devil Ray.
He did, 04. Blummer likes to say, you know, he didn't love his year here. It didn't go the way he had hoped for, but at the same time, he does have history here. He wore the green back then of the Devil Rays in 2004, and it's good to have Blummer in the booth. We have a lot of fun together. He's very easy to work with. You can bounce almost anything off of him. And to me, that's the key. If you have work with a partner who you can throw anything at and know that they're good with it, then you're good to go.
And as we know, it's a lot easier when you've got a good team. And it looks like you guys have a really good one in Houston.
They do. The Astros have a really good squad. I think 1 through 9 lineup-wise, you don't get many breathers. It's very tough, I think, for starters to go through that lineup 3 times. And then if they get a lead towards the back end of the bullpen, they've got a really great combination of arms. I mean, yesterday, in Friday's game, you saw Will Harris 7th, Luke Gregerson 8th, Ken Giles 9th. That's normally the process they go through. But you've also got a guy, Chris Devenski, who can go multiple innings, who can also close out games. He's like the ultimate weapon back there. And so they've got a lot of good arms in their bullpen. And they've, you know, their starting rotation has gotten the job done to the point where they're now 12-5. So it's been fun to watch the early part of the season.
I know you mentioned before the first game it was going to be weird if you had to call a Longo homer, and you did.
Yeah.
How strange was it?
It was weird because I said as the ball was leaving, it's heading towards the Duckies area in left center field, and nobody in Houston knows what that means. So as I was making the call, I realized that probably didn't hit home much for the Astros fans. And I think I got a little excited too much on the Beckham play at deep short. So I think I caught myself a couple of times. But after the Longoria home run, I then explained what the Duckies area meant and why it's important to Longoria. So, yeah, I'm still catching myself, knowing 19 years is a tough habit to break sometimes.
No doubt, but we're very happy for you. Thrilled for the opportunity in Houston, and wish you plenty of success this year and many years to come.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thank you, buddy, and always great talking to you.
Great to catch up with one Todd Callis, formerly of Fox Sports Sun, now the TV play-by-play voice of the Houston Astros. Now, if Todd were in his former role here, he probably would have sat down this week with Rita Manning of Seminole. Rita came earlier in the week for a game in advance of her 99th birthday, and I asked Rita what drew her to the Rays in the first place.
There was a lady that her son bought 2 tickets for her to go to and to bring somebody else, and I drove her. That's how I got going.
And you've been hooked ever since?
Yep.
Now, you've obviously had a wonderful, full life. What does it mean to come out here in advance of your birthday?
Really, I'll tell you what, it's much different than when I came before. I don't know why, it just seems different.
Do you have a favorite player? I know you follow the team.
Kiermaier. Kiermaier.
But have you been coming since the beginning of Rays games? You've got the purple shirts. I mean, so you've been coming for a while. How often do you come?
Well, I did have season tickets, but now I'm in a retirement home, so I only come on the bus. So.
And I'm sure it's nice to come with friends?
Yes, it is. Very nice.
What makes the Rays special to you?
I guess just because I didn't go to the ball games till I came here. And I like the ushers here. And Cass Halpin. You know Cass? I love her.
You, I'm told, lived a pretty full life in terms of your career before you retired. You were in the FBI?
31 years. Yeah, 31 years.
What was that like?
I loved every day, and I loved the people I worked with. They were great.
How did you get into that work?
Well, I worked for a U.S. attorney. And an agent came in and asked me to take a deposition for him on something that they found on a train going into Canada. And so I took it, and he said, why didn't I go to work for the FBI? And I did.
And how many years have you been down here now?
I came down in 77, 40 years.
To have lived this long a life and this successfully, what's your secret?
Too ornery to die, I guess. I've really had a good life. And I'm in a retirement home, so that's good, too.
Well, we look forward to seeing you back here next year. How's that sound?
Good.
Great to meet a treasure like Rita Manning, and a happy 99th birthday ahead for her. Now, moments like these are big for fans, but believe it, sometimes just getting back to the big leagues and being seen by people like Rita Manning is big for the players. Shane Peterson was out most of last year due to injury and then signed with the Rays as a minor league free agent. He was added to the club's roster in Boston when Malik Smith went down with a hamstring pull. And so far, Shane Peterson has helped a great deal in wins against right-handed pitching. And I asked Shane what the most recent call-up to Tampa Bay meant for him.
Last year has been a pretty trying year as far as injury and not playing very much. And so it was definitely a long year mentally and physically, but it was definitely a lot of the work I put in, which was hard at times, but it meant a lot to just be able to be back here in the big leagues, which is something, you know, there are times when I wasn't sure if that would be possible again.
Did it kind of validate the decision you made, too? I know you relied on some friends, some people you knew in coming to the Rays and getting such an early call-up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that the training staff here was a big reason why I wanted to come, knowing that they'd put me in a good position to stay on the field, which for me was the key because, you know, nothing good can happen if you're not on the field. So being over here was definitely a great decision, not just because everything worked out, but I think just, you know, regardless of what happened, I think being here is good.
I know you also relied on the opinion of a guy who used to be here, Jake Elmore. Did you text him after you got the call? Have you traded any messages since?
I haven't texted him since I got called up. I talked to him a little bit before that, but it's one of those things. During the season, it's always hard to keep up with guys. Everybody's so busy and everything, but I definitely, he was a big factor in me coming over here, knowing that he had such a good experience, and having spent a lot of time with him, I know that we would hopefully have similar experiences, and I could trust and rely on that.
The home run you hit in Boston in your first plate appearance, off a Cy Young Award winner too, and Rick Porcello, where did that rank in terms of moments you've had?
I mean, it was amazing. I think considering all that's happened over the last year, you know, any home runs are always special. You know, they can be hard to come by, and the fact that it was early on, and it was after having been down for a whole year and off of, you know, a reigning Cy Young Award winner is something I'll always remember, and hopefully there'll be more I can do more to remember, but it's also for the time being something that takes the cake as far as my career goes.
And in terms of, you not only get a home run in your first plate appearance, but you also got a hit your first time coming back to your home park.
Yeah, you know, being here is definitely a different feel. Everybody knows, you know, the Trop can be a different place as far as with the roof, and indoors is always different, but it's just good to get off to a good start, and everybody wants to do well early on, and that's something that the better you can start, the more relaxed you'll be, and that's something that I'm hoping to continue to be able to do well so I can be relaxed and just contribute and help the team win.
Did the year where you didn't play that much last year, did you learn much about yourself, and was there an ability maybe to even watch the game some that maybe slows it down a little bit more now?
I think for me it was more mentally knowing that, you know, baseball can be a grind. There can be times where you're like, man, like this is hard. It's definitely, you know, it's not an easy life in the minor leagues especially. But having not played for the whole year kind of, you know, reinstated my desire to want to play and to try to do everything I can to be the best that I can so that I can play this game as long as possible. Because, you know, I went a full year without playing, and I know what that's like, and I don't want to experience that again for, you know, at least, you know, a while.
And that is Shane Peterson, who has 7 hits in 7 games with the Rays, including his first homer with Tampa Bay. Now, Peterson was the 9th player in Rays history to ever homer in his first plate appearance with a club. And he isn't the only call-up to help the Rays win some games this week. Chase Whitley has made 2 appearances since coming up from AAA Durham and has thrown a total of 5 scoreless innings. Now, Whitley was one of the last cuts in spring training and certainly has appreciated the chance after coming back last year from Tommy John surgery.
Just anytime you get an opportunity, that's all you can ask for. You can, you know, and hopefully to be able to do the best you can do. I mean, I think that's one thing that I can do is go out and perform, and that's all I can control is the effort I put into each and every day.
You have relieved and you've started the back and forth. Is it easier for you to handle it because you've done both, you think, than some others?
I mean, I guess so. I don't know. At this point, I feel like I'm just like a – it's just versatile, that can just do whatever can happen. I mean, I don't have any preference of either one. It's nice knowing what's going on, but at the same time, I'm just like I said, I'm happy to be here, and whatever role I'm pitching, I'm good with that.
What's the hardest part from the mental preparation standpoint, though? You know, preparing for every fifth day, knowing, hey, this is when I'm going to pitch, and I'm going to pitch 5, 6, whatever innings,
yeah.
Or I may pitch today, I may pitch tomorrow, I need to be ready every day at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coming to the park every day. I mean, you know, like whenever you on your game day, you put everything into your side day and you put everything into your game day, and as a starter. But as a reliever, man, you get I mean, I was prepared to pitch yesterday. So, you know, it's every day. Hey, I'm here to pitch. I'm not here to do anything else other than to pitch. And that's how I got to prepare, and that's how you should prepare.
to personalize this from a family standpoint, what's the hardest part? I mean, do they go with you to Durham? I know you've got a wife and a young son who's two. I mean, how do you handle that aspect of this part of it?
Well, she's everything. I mean, she without her, I mean, it's nothing. I mean, as far as baseball was, and I mean, she does it all. That's the thing that the fans never don't see is she's driving from Durham to home to here, and I mean, with a 2-year-old. So I mean, it's tough on a family, man. It's not easy, but you know, we signed up for it, and she does a daggum good job of going about it. So I mean, that's how much, you know, I love and respect her.
Did they follow you yet here, and are they here now? And how do you kind of handle the I don't know what's next?
We found out Saturday she drove home on Sunday. Fortunately, my mother-in-law was in town, so she drove one of our vehicles home, and then my wife drove home down here on Monday. And man, just, you know, whatever's next, we've got some plans and ideas, but at the same time, we've learned that whatever those plans and ideas probably ain't gonna be what happens. So we're good with whatever.
Chase Whitley giving us a great deal of insight into the family challenges that occurred during the course of the season. Hopefully Chase's wife Brooklyn and their 2-year-old son Cleet will settle in St. Petersburg for a good portion of the schedule, and then the whatever is with the Rays. Terrific stuff from not only Chase, but all our guests, Steven Souza Jr., Doug Wechter, Brent Honeywell, Todd Callis, and Shane Peterson, as well as 99-year-old Rita Manning. Now, if you ever have something you want to hear on the show, all you have to do is tweet me at Neil Solons. Next week's program includes interviews with one Tommy Hunter and much more. Thanks as well to Cameron Billis on site and Len Martez back at our studios. I'm Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The pregame show is next as the Rays get set for the Houston Astros to wrap up a homestand on the Rays Baseball Network.